This, for the record, this is Wayne, middle name?
Arlo.
Wayne Arlo Williamson being interviewed on the date of September 12th by a daughter, Ann Williamson, and her husband, yours truly, Eric Kane, C-A-I-N. Okay.
2004,
yes. Okay, Wayne, where were you born?
I was born in La Grande, Oregon.
And how did your parents come to live in La Grande, Oregon?
Well, we both came through their parents to live in that part of the world. My father's family came out in the covered wagons, and there were stories about how they suffered through the plains and arriving in the Grand Ronde Valley, which is a very beautiful valley, green and flat. And the story is that they thought it was so great they decided to stay right there instead of doing what a lot of the pioneers did in those days, and that was go on to the Willamette Valley. So they just stopped there and got by as best they could. They talked to me about living in sod houses. I don't know if that's true, but nevertheless, they just made do with whatever was available at the time and got going and just stayed there. And I was born in 1921, and they were there in 1890-something or other was when they started.
These were your parents?
They were my parents.
And had they come with their parents also?
Well, my father was born in La Grande, so his parents came to La Grande through that Grand Ronde Valley on the wagon train. My father was not in existence at that time. He was born later. I can't remember when he was born, but it was 1890-something or other. So he was born in La Grande, like I was born in La Grande.
And your mother?
Well, she was, of course, in a totally different family, and they came out later. And I'm not really too sure about my mother's forefathers, but they came somewhere from the Midwest and settled in and around La Grande, bought land there and had a farm. And that's where my mother there, but I don't really know much history about my mother's family prior to their arrival in La Grande area.
So about what date do you think your grandparents got to the Grand Ronde Valley?
Well, I think it was, we have on the wall in there. What's the date, Lois, on that, it's 1890-something.
I thought that Tom and Susan Williamson came in 1862 on the wagon train.
Well, this is earlier than that. This is when they left Ireland. And the date, Lois is looking up the date that they got from their pastor in Ireland. We're coming through this foreign land, it says on the letter from the, to show that these were married people in the church, so that they were nice, good citizens. What's the date, Lois?
Here comes the entire book.
No, I wanted just off the wall in there.
Oh, when they left Ireland.
When they left Ireland.
So had your grandparents come from Ireland?
Yes.
The
great-grandparents. They came from Ireland, and as far as I know, settled in Philadelphia for a while.
The documents were written in 1839.
Okay, that's when they were in Ireland.
1839.
In 1839. And they left there and came to this foreign country, the United States, of course. And then I don't know exactly, but they ended up in the Midwest somewhere, and it was they had a farm, my immediate ancestor, and they apparently were chased out of there or became very unhappy because of their anti-slavery views, and the neighbors apparently didn't like that and chased them out of the country. So they left with practically getting nothing for their farm, and then started on for what turned out to be Oregon, which would have been in 1840 something.
Wow. Okay, well, we can find, dig up those dates later and write them down.
Yeah.
Let's go to LaGrange.
Okay.
Do you have an earliest childhood memory?
The earliest childhood memory I have is when we were living at what was then called Third Street, which is quite a few blocks from where we ended up on Oak Street. On Third Street, I remember I was just a little kid, and the thing that sticks in my mind, and I can't remember if I really can recall this or I heard the story so many times that I think I recall it, but across the street from our house and on the little creek that ran there with water, and somewhere or another I got hung up on that over the water and the big danger of falling into the creek and drowning, and my sister raced over and got my mother and came back and got me, supposedly saving my life. My earliest memory is that, and I can remember then at that same area of the ice cream man going around ringing his bell and calling people to come buy ice cream, because I'd hear that bell and I'd just become frantic to get an ice cream cone, and I usually got one. So those are the earliest memories I've had of living in that area.
Now, you said your parents may have lived in the sod house at some point.
Not my parents.
Grandparents.
But the grandparents would have been.
So by the time you were born, I imagine.
Well, by the time I was
born. Pretty civilized.
Oh, yeah, they were living in a house and paved streets and the whole ball of wax. There is a. Even today, you look at the Grand, and it will say Williamson Edition, which is a designated geographic spot on the city of the Grand, which is where my forefathers first settled. And they had quite a bit of land around their place, and built a house. And the house is still there, as far as I know. And my grandmother lived there. Now, that house was built, I'm not sure, as I sit here now, if it was built by my grandparents or their forefathers. I think it was built by my grandparents, and that's where my grandmother, Williamson, lived after her husband died, and he died in 1920 or something like 18, and lived there until she passed away in about 1920.
Do you remember your first address?
On Third Street? No, I can't remember the address. I remember it was on Third Street, which is just out of downtown LaGrande, about 4 or 5 blocks.
And what did your parents do, your father do for
them? Well, what? I think the first thing that my parents, my mother and father did, as far as I know, is they, after they got married, they homesteaded in an area around Baker City. And my grandfather was engaged in real estate at that time. He's the one that went to Alaska, and I don't know if you want me to branch off onto that right now or not.
No, just briefly, why did you go to Alaska?
Hunting for gold.
He went up there during the 1890 gold rush.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so he was up there and left my grandmother and her kids in very desperate straits. After 2 years, he had to give up the gold mining thing and came back to La Grande and got it too busy doing work. But the kind of work that he was doing was almost like in real estate. He was selling information to where people could go and homestead. And he traveled all over the Eastern Oregon country and knew it very, very well. And sold information to people who wanted to go and homestead. And my parents, when they started out, that's what they did. They went to one of those places that my grandfather had told them would be a good place to start, and got the land and built a residence on it, just a little shack type place, and commenced living there. And my mother made my father promise that when she got pregnant that they would leave the homestead and come to La Grande or someplace. So he lived up to his agreement, and when she got pregnant with my sister, they came to La Grande, and he worked for the railroad in the railroad yards that they had there. They're gone now, but where they would work on the engines and the cars and put them in shape. And so my father worked for them for a while, and then he got into the real estate business, as his father before him had really been in the real estate business. And he then branched off into insurance with his real estate business, and that's the business that he created and worked for the rest of his life until he sold out to his brother. So I worked in that real estate office when I was in high school and so on. But earlier than that, I had started grade school, and my mother was a second grade teacher. And I was not doing well in school. I was in grade school in La Grande, the first grade. I was having a very hard time in school, which my mother, being a school teacher, recognized. I think it was probably due to the fact that I had eye trouble. I later wore glasses. They got me glasses. But that first grade was very difficult for me. And so my mother, which she could do in those days apparently, took me out of school at the central grade school where I started with all my usual friends, and she transferred me to Greenwood, which was on the other side of town. So she took me over there for my second grade. And actually, that Greenwood school is quite a ways from where we were living. We then left at some point along in there, 3rd Street, and moved to Oak Street. And when I would leave Greenwood school, I would go with my mother to get there. But then I would leave school as near as I can remember, pretty much by myself, and walk home, which was quite a walk for a kid in the second grade.
How long a walk?
I don't know. I don't know if it'd be a mile or what, but quite a while. It was on the other side of the tracks, and it must have been 6 or 8 blocks on the other side of the tracks. Then you get to the tracks, go through downtown La Grande, and then over to where our house was.
Was it a safe walk? Were you in any kind of danger from your...
Not in those days, at least nobody thought about it that I was in any danger. But it was a fun walk. I enjoyed the walk because I can still remember going that route. I would go by a blacksmith shop, which was right next to the railroad, where the railroad went by. The blacksmith had nothing to do with the railroad, but his shop was located there. As I would be walking by, I loved to go by that blacksmith shop and watch the blacksmith in there doing whatever he was going to do, shoe a horse, make horseshoes, or things of that sort. And I remember that. Even today, I remember very much being there to watch the blacksmith doing his work. It was fascinating, all the sparks flying and so on. Then I would walk across the railroad tracks, and there was a bakery there. And I can still smell the wonderful odors coming from the bakery. And then from then I would walk on home. So those are my earliest memories of my first, second, and kindergarten grades. I didn't mention that I do remember kindergarten, which was before I had even started at Central Grade School. I remember my parents taking me to this little place where we'd have kindergarten. I remember the location of it, and I remember vaguely about doing something in kindergarten. I can't tell you what, but little kid type stuff. I just remember being there. So I had supposedly a good start. Then I got into first grade, and I was not doing well in the first grade. And as I say, my mother took me out. And she worked with me at home. And of course I got my glasses, and I think that probably helped. And she spent a lot of time with me, so that by the time I went to the third grade, I was much better off and better prepared than I would have been had she not taken me in hand.
But, and she took you out of the first school and put you into her grade, right? So she was your teacher.
She was my teacher in the second grade. She taught second grade. She took me out of where I started in first grade and put me in her class, and then worked with me at home as well as at school. And so after she got me up to speed, then I went back to the school I started in, and from the third grade, and stayed there from then on.
I want to ask you more questions about your childhood, but a couple things before we get too far away from them. Where was the homestead that your parents
had? It was up around Baker. You go through... Well, I went to that homestead with my father. He took me there when I was probably about 8 or 10. I can remember the visit because it was just he and I, and we went up there to camp, and he wanted to see what was going on the homestead, because when he had left there, it was still his. He owned the land. He had homesteaded it and did the necessary things to acquire title to the land, and he heard that there were some people living on his land up there, and they were hunting for gold. So he wanted to go up and check and find out what they were doing. And I didn't really appreciate all this. All I knew is we were going to go see the homestead that I had heard my parents talk about for so many years. And it was up in the mountain type country. And as I say, it was a nice spot up there. I can see why they selected that spot to try to homestead it. He was raising cattle, is what he was doing. And so we went up there and checked on the people. It was up, we'd go there out of Baker, and you'd go by Halfway. That's a little town.
I know where Halfway is.
And you'd go through halfway. And my mother said she could remember in the wagon going up to the homestead and looking at the lights and halfway as they went on up the road.
Is the family still on that land?
No. My father sold it when I was... First, those people that were looking for gold on the land, my father encouraged to stay there and look. He was quite sure there was no gold, but it was, if they wanted to look, well, he was all for it. And then later on, my father sold that land. And there are other Williamson family members who also did the same thing, went into that same area to establish homestead. My uncle Joe did, and my Aunt Margaret, on my mother's side, she went up there and created a homestead. I don't know if she ever got the land or if she ever stayed to do the necessary things they had to do to earn the right to the title. But my father did, and he kept the land and finally sold it for something. I must have been in high school by the time he sold it finally.
So getting back to being a kid in Le Grand, I'm curious if you had any, this is kind of abstract question, but did you have any sense of where you were in relation to the rest of Oregon or the rest of the U.S. early on?
No, I really didn't. I didn't get out of Oregon until quite late in life, actually. I can't remember how old I was when we got to Portland, but that was a big trip to go to Portland from Le Grand. So I was just really pretty well isolated in Le Grand and the surrounding little towns. I knew a lot about the Lowell Lake and Baker and those little towns, but I was pretty isolated from my experience and my knowledge in Le Grand.
Was it a nice place to be a kid growing up?
Wonderful, absolutely wonderful. Our house, where we moved from 3rd Street, was on Oak Street. And you'd walk out and it was a nice house. My father built it, had it built. And you'd walk out the back door of my house, and within a couple of blocks, you were in the foothills that surrounded Le Grand. And from then you would walk wherever you wanted, go up on top of Rooster Peak, which was a small mountain there, or you go up to what they call Dutch Spring, which was a spring up, you go up a different route and so on. So, and as a kid, we did all those things by ourselves. Nobody supervising us. And the friends I had in the neighborhood would all do those things. I can remember before I started hiking up to Rooster Peak or into the spring of trying to take a lunch in a paper sack and walking up those foothills in the spring, and it was muddy. You get your feet so full of mud you couldn't really walk. But I was just a little kid and would do that and go up there and get buttercups and other flowers. And so, and then as I got older, why, we were free to do all those things, go all around those foothills, which were in a rather mountain-type country, really. Not like you were in the Wallowas, but nonetheless, you were in small hills.
When you went there as kids, were you just hiking and walking around, or were you hunting or fishing?
Well, we fished and hunted. I didn't do much fishing, and I didn't do much actual hunting in those days. I have a shotgun that I got when I was 12 years old, and I've given it to Sam. And I, before I got my own shotgun, I had been hunting. But in the days that you're talking about, when it was earlier than that, when we were hiking in there, we'd just take a lunch or a sandwich or something and go off hiking and play games. I can remember cutting wads out of small reeds and using them as spears and throwing them at each other. Dangerous, really, but we did it. And so we just were free to go and not worrying about crime or anything of that sort. So, and on our own, as I say, just as little kids. And so it was a wonderful place to grow up and do lots of walking.
What kind of games did you play as kids?
Well, we played those games where you're on the foothills up there chasing each other and throwing spears at each other and so on. And then in the wintertime, of course, we did sledding. There was a pretty good hill down. It was on the paved street of Le Grand. And they usually had snow in the wintertime. And they would close off this hill for kids to use their sleds on it. And I'd only have to walk about a block from where we lived to where this sliding hill was. And we spent a lot of time doing that sort of stuff in the wintertime. And then there was a pond not too far down the road, which was called Dutch Pond at that time. It was just natural. Later on, they made it into a swimming pool area and kind of a playground. But when I was a kid, it was just a natural pond. You couldn't swim in it, but in the wintertime, the ice would form on it, and you could walk on the ice and so on. So we did a lot of that kind of stuff. And...
You mean like ice skating?
Yes, we do some ice skating. On those ponds. But I never did become very good at ice skating because there wasn't any real place to ice skate. But as kids, we just played around in the streets there or in the wintertime in the snow.
How about organized, more classical sports?
Well, of course I joined the Boy Scouts. First I was a Cub Scout. Now that's before you're 12. And I can remember wanting to join into the Boy Scouts. And I was only 11. And my friends were already in the Boy Scouts. I had started school. My birthday was in November and most of the kids were 6 by the time they started the school and I was 5. So I was behind them a little bit that many months. So they were able to be Boy Scouts before I was. But I was so anxious to become a Boy Scout that I had knew all the things to do to get my tenderfoot in second class and first class. And so as soon as I was 12 years old, I was zooming right into first class because I had already planned on doing this and I knew everything that was required to do that. And so I think I got to be a life scout, which is the next step up from where I was. And about that time, we didn't care much about the Boy Scouts anymore. We went into a different club where we had dances with girls. And that was the beginning of the association with somebody other than just boys. Pretty much. And that was after I was 12. So before I was 12, it was just my boyfriends and I running around the Grand and doing all those things. And I learned to roller skate at a very young age and actually roller skated to school after I got going in Central School again. And later on I rode my bike to school. And I would come home for lunch. It was still 10, 12 blocks from school, but everybody walked or rode their bike or roller skated or something. And my mother would fix me lunch. And I would take me about 15 minutes or so to get from school to home. She would have a sandwich there ready for me. I would eat the sandwich, go back and get along with some of the other kids in the neighborhood doing exactly the same thing, go back to school, which seemed ridiculous when you could carry a sandwich in a paper sack if you wanted to, and I suppose I did part of the time. But I came home for lunch for a long time. And then after I got into about the eighth grade, I started playing baseball and basketball. And I loved basketball and baseball, and later on football. So during those early years, even before high school, I was spending a lot of time engaged in those sporting activities.
Really close to, you got another question left. Oh, I'm really curious that you really did not have much to do with girls before age 12.
Very little.
So let's start that last sentence again.
About that you were surprised at even having to do with girls until I was about 12 years old. Well, about 12, maybe a little bit younger, Marcella Gardner used to have these parties that she would invite us all to. And we thought they were wonderful parties. Girls would come and boys would come. And we would play things like spin the bottle, which meant you'd have the milk bottle there and you're spinning around. A boy, I can't remember exactly, but it would be like a boy, you'd spin the bottle. If the bottle ended up pointing at a girl, you had to go and kiss her. That brought lots of laughter, lots of fun in one way or another. Later on, it got more serious, and we had to quit doing that sort of thing. But in the early days, we didn't have much to do, very much with girls. We were there in school all the time, and the girls, and I was friendly with a lot of the girls and so on, but we didn't really do anything much with them. We were in the Boy Scouts and so on, as I say. I guess what it was, I joined the B-Malay after I was about 12. And they had dances, and that's where we started really having dates and going to dances. And so the spin the bottle stuff was just before rather, we got into the B-Malay. So we didn't have too much, it was mostly a man's world as far as I was concerned.
Okay. I'm going to get something else to drink while Anne talks.
Well,
one
thing we skipped over was your memories of the circus.
When I was a kid, the circus would come to town. It would come on the railroad train. And I would be taken down to watch the unloading of the circus train, which was a wonderful event to watch, see the horses and the donkeys and so on, and the elephants. They'd always have an elephant or two, maybe even a giraffe. I don't remember. I'll have to back off on that giraffe. I think maybe it was a giraffe. And the thing that was really great for me, and I was still just a kid, but it wasn't too far from where we were living on Oak Street, and also by Dutch Pond. There was a big vacant area out there, and they would erect the circus tent. And of course, the circus tent was a big tent, particularly for a young man like I was, boy. And we would go and watch them. After watching them unload the animals from the train, then we'd go out there and watch them erect the circus tent. And I can remember them pounding the stakes for the circus tent into the ground. And there would be three or four, maybe even five men who would have these big mallets, and they would pound in these big stakes into the ground, and they would just go in a circle, bang, 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 around the circle, each of them hitting the mallet and the stake with their mallet, and having the stake be driven in slowly into the ground, which was, as I say, it was fascinating to watch. I didn't enjoy watching it even today. The way they worked it, and then they would erect the tent, and then you'd go to the circus, and you'd be sitting on bleachers, and they had all the things that you associate with circus. They had acrobats and a clown, and I loved going to the circus, and they would usually have also a sideshow, which was separate. It would be erected, and it had these big banners showing what was you could see at the sideshow. And for the most part, they were just poor, freak people. I can remember a native with great big lips. They put right from Africa. They had these rings that they would put in their lips to stretch them out, and they would have other poor people there that you'd go and gawk at. And wasn't really, you'd get in there and you wonder why you spent the 25 cents to go in. And sometimes they would even have a boxer who would offer to take on any local boy or man that wanted to, and they'd try to get up enough somebody to come in and go through a boxing match, which were never any good. But they would have them, the suckers would sometimes go in. But I love to watch the circus. Particularly, I can enjoy watching them erect the circus, because when they pulled it up, after they got the stakes all in place, that was quite an event. And they would have the elephants doing various things. I can't remember exactly what they did, but the elephants were working. They used them to help them erect the tent.
Right. Well, skipping school to do this, or was?
Well, I suppose I was. This was when I was still in grade school that I am talking about. And I first started going to the circus when I was probably in the third or fourth grade, and then later on into the upper grades in grade school. I can't remember when the circus quit coming, but eventually it did. And it didn't, I don't know if it was going other places and just not stopping in the Grand or not, but the whole town would enjoy having the circus come there. Something different.
So all you're there with all your friends?
I'd be there with my friends.
Not your parents?
Well, I'd go with my parents, yeah. But watching the circus be erected, I was just my friends, and my parents weren't with me at that time. I can't remember going to a sideshow with my parents.
Yeah. And there were stories about, there's one right that I just remember you talking about was the riding with somebody's, Eric has the notes, somebody's had a car, Dickie. Somebody had a car?
Oh, yes. Well, I was in high school, and Dickie Moore, one of the neighbors, had this big old sedan, but it was a convertible sedan. They certainly don't make them anymore, and I don't know how many years they made them, but it was big. It was just like a regular passenger car, except it was a convertible. It had a back seat, and he lived somewhat close to me in the neighborhood, and he would drive to school. I didn't go with him in the morning, but I tried to go with him in the afternoon, because he was coming home for lunch also. And all of us that lived in that neighborhood would try to run out and jump into that convertible, and we were just hanging on every part of the car we could hang on to. So get there and get a ride home for lunch, then try to get back in time to get into the convertible taken back.
So he's driving down the street and everyone's running and jumping on?
No, running and jumping on as he's getting out of the school parking lot. And then when we got home, he was very generous if you could get on. He didn't try to beat you off. It was dangerous, of course, but his attitude was, well, you make it, make it. If you can't, good luck.
Okay, so we talked a little bit about your grandfather, John Williamson.
Who I don't remember. He died before I was born.
In 1918, it looks like he died.
Did you have refrigeration or did you use ice to keep things cold?
Right, the ice.
Oh, we had ice, I can remember. That was quite an event when I was a kid, too. The ice man would come around in his truck, and I can't remember if it was horse-drawn or not. It might have been. But in any event, he'd come and he'd have this truck all full of ice. And he'd come to your house and check your ice box to see how much ice you had left, if any, from the last time he'd been there. Then he'd go out and cut a block of ice to fit the place in your refrigerator that would accept it. And he would cut that with a cross-cut saw. And I can remember being a kid and standing around his truck as he was sawing the ice and trying to catch the snow from the, as he used his saw, it'd be like sawdust, and it would be ice, little pieces of ice, actually snow by the time he got through carving it, and then eating that ice. Then if he felt in the mood, he'd chip off a chunk of ice and give it to you so you could suck on it. So I love to see the ice man come. And there was a guy that also, I think he must have been like the postal service. He had a one-horse buggy that he would call. I guess you would call it. I mean, what is a one-horse? It was just one horse, and then he would stand on the back of it, and he would have a box in front of it, pretty good sized box, and he would put all these parcels in the box. Then he would trot around town with his horse and stop and deliver the merchandise that was being purchased and sold out of his box, and everybody liked him. His name was Toots. Toots Goody. And everybody loved Toots. And when he'd come by, everybody would say hello and give me a present, Toots, and so on. And he was just a good, fun person to see coming around the neighborhood.
Right. And your aunts in their orchard and your mother canning.
Yes, my aunt. As I say, I don't have a very good memories of my mother family as coming out to Oregon. In here, there it tells somewhere where they came from, the Midwest. But in any event, they settled around the Grand, and they had two farms, small farms, I suppose about 20 acres apiece, or maybe even less. And one of them is where my grandmother and grandfather lived, and my mother and her sisters and brother.
And that would be the Adlers.
That would be the Adlers. And they lived there. And then on the adjoining farm, my mother's sister, Ella, married a man by the name of Hall. So the two farms, the Adler farm and the Hall farm, were adjoining. And before I was born, I guess they were created, because all I know is when I grew old enough, I'd go out there to that farm and work on my grandmother's farm, and also on Ella's farm later on. And Ella usually was an orchard. She had apples and peaches and apricots, cherries, but mostly apples. And on my grandmother's farm, they had the same thing, but they also had berries and so on. And I would go and work there on my grandmother. And Ella Hall's husband had died by the time I can remember. So Ella had her place, and my grandmother had her place. As I say, they were adjoining. And they jointly had a hired man named Henry that they got from the poor farm, who came and worked and helped them around with the orchard. And they also hired a man by the name, whose name was Andy. And I can remember working with Andy on the farm. My father wanted me to have the pleasure of working and earning money, so he was giving me 50 cents a day to go and work on my on the farm, and I would work on either Ella's farm or my grandmother's farm, and I'd be working with Andy. And Andy was being paid $1 a day. And he thought that I was being overpaid. I remember having discussions with him, and him saying, "Do you think you're doing half as much work as I am?" And I certainly did. I thought I was being underpaid because I was doing at least half as much or more work than Andy did. But a lot of it had to do with irrigation. Andy would get the well working and the pump, and pump the water, and the water then would run through ditches, and you would direct it to the orchard, and worked like the devil, but it was really a lot of fun because you were busy building dams and having to stop leaks where the ditches would overflow and be going in the wrong direction, and you'd be running around with your shovel to get those fixed up. And I can remember, I don't know how many years I did that, but I think I did it for more than one summer. As I say, my father was paying me, which I wasn't really quite aware of. And my grandmother and the aunts would give me lunch, gave Andy a nice lunch too.
And then how, they had a grocery store
somehow. Yeah. The aunts had Ella and Margaret, my mother's sisters, had this little grocery store, which they were barely able to keep in existence. It was Margaret's idea, because she wanted to have a store. And the idea of the store was to sell the produce that they were growing on the farm, corn and berries and apples and other products, fruit of various kinds. And then, of course, to make the store go, they would have other things for sale, canned soup and other things that were around there. But it was just a little store. And they had a little place in the back where they could stay. They didn't stay all night there, as far as I know. They'd go back and forth from the farm to this grocery store, which was never successful and just barely went by. And the one thing that I can remember about that grocery store, which is kind of off to the side, but that was where I first and only can remember Uncle Sam. And Sam was the brother of my grandfather, John. And when they came out, the pioneers, John and Sam were young men. And there were tales about it, how they had to work very hard to get the pioneer wagons through the prairie and across the rivers and so on. And so I didn't really appreciate the fact that the old man that I was looking at, Sam, was that much of a forefather, like my grandfather was, who had already died, as I had mentioned. And I can remember my uncle, this Uncle Sam, with a white beard, a big white beard, and driving a old buggy with a horse. And he stopped in Ellen Margaret's grocery store and bought some kind of candy. I can't remember what it was, but maybe he bought some other things, I don't know. But I still have this vision of him being in the store, buying candy, getting back in his wagon, and then trotting off down the street. And that's all I remember about Sam. But he was had wonderful stories about Sam. Growing up, he was very strong. And they tell the tales about my uncles. Told me about at harvest time, the men would gather around and they wrestle and do things like that for entertainment. And the idea was to see if we could get two guys who could put Sam down. He could put any one of them down with nothing flat. So they'd try to get two of them who'd be big enough and strong enough to lick him in a wrestling match. But he was quite an athlete, I guess. Some story, I can't really remember, about him doing the hop, skip, and jump, and doing it with Indians. It was all in fun. And he supposedly could go hop, skip, and jump in a plowed field. Amazing distances, that's all I know. As a kid, they said how far. I wouldn't know how far it was. But, so he was a real character in his youth. As I say, he died. I suppose when I remember seeing him, I was in grade school, because my grandfather had already died.
He was your grandfather's brother?
Uncle, brother.
So
Sam.
He was your great uncle?
Well, I don't know. He was the brother of my grandfather.
You called him Uncle Sam.
Well, everybody called him Uncle Sam. That's why I called him Uncle Sam. Yeah, I don't think he was my uncle, but I don't know why everybody always called him Uncle. Maybe because of the United States of America politicians. I don't know.
He was somebody's uncle.
He was your father's uncle.
Yeah, I guess that was it. That was why he called him Uncle.
Right.
But I know that he referred to him as Uncle Sam.
And he is the son of Tom and Sarah, Susan Williamson, that came across the plains.
I guess that's right.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Are there other people that you have strong memories of that really stand out, that made an impression on you?
When I was just little, or after I grew up a bit?
Yeah.
Or both? Well, I liked all the Williamson men in the family. My father had, what was it, five brothers. I didn't care much about Joe. I was very fond of Kenneth. Liked Robert very much. Ellis, I didn't really know. Ellis was went into the Army. He went to West Point and ended up a colonel. Not a general, but a colonel. And those people, my uncles, I have distinct memories and were very fond of. I can remember I had several coaches when I was in grade school and later on in high school that I was very fond of. And I had some teachers that I liked very much. I liked one in about the fifth grade, I can remember. And I had a good fourth grade teacher. And
do you remember their names?
No. Mahaffey was one of them. She was one of my teachers that I can remember. And when we were in high school, in the Boy Scouts, we put on a play. We still have pictures here of the people in the scout boy play of Tom Sawyer. All boys. I was Aunt Polly and dressed up. We have a picture of me as Aunt Polly. Then we had Tom Sawyer and Indian Joe and the whole mess of them. As I say, we have a picture here showing all the various people. And I think that was in the, maybe in the freshman in high school, somewhere along there. And before that, I guess it was still in the Boy Scouts, one of the members' mother produced the play. It was Robinson Crusoe. And we produced that play. And so we spent a lot of time on those two plays in relatively close time period. So we had a chance to do acting, which I enjoyed a lot.
I wonder if that had anything to do with your eventual career.
Might have. I liked acting. When I got into high school, I was in plays. And when I was going to Eastern Oregon College in the Grand, I acted in plays. And I always liked doing it. And so the idea of becoming a lawyer and trying cases in court appealed to me from an early age, and that may have had something to do with it.
You mentioned Indians a couple times. Was there an Indian presence in the Grand?
Well, not so much in the Grand. There certainly was in Pelham. But there were really kind of curiosities that to me, as at the time, you'd go to Pendleton and you would see these Indian bucks and stuff standing around, obviously Indians, and really people that you would feel sorry for. I can remember one time my father, maybe my mother, at least my father, took me and some other people and they went to Pendleton. And Pendleton had quite an Indian population there. And they were putting on kind of a show. And I can't remember, it was inside, and I think it probably was inside a big tent. Although, as I say, I can't really recall. I found it rather dull as a kid, because the Indians, they were doing dances, and they were just kind of shuffling around and not doing very much in the way of real dances that you were there to see. The genuine Indian dances, which, as I say, I was not. They weren't spectacular at all. They were very dull. And I can remember my father saying that he was talking to an old buck Indian there at that place, because my father had taken me. And my father said this old buck Indian was very unhappy with the fact that the younger Indians did not want to continue to do the old things that they had been doing as younger. The dances, for example, they didn't want to learn the old dances and do the performances that had been done before. And at the Pelham Roundup, there's always a lot of Indians. Maybe even so today, they would have an area where they would put up teepees. And I don't think they lived there year-round, but during Roundup, they'd be there, and the people could come and meet them and talk to them and so on. But from my point of view, they're really just curious people that I didn't really know and had very few in the Grand, just like the Grand had very few blacks. I had a few, and I had a few Chinese people. I remember there was a Chinese laundry, just like you might think, and they had who took in laundry and did the laundry. And there was a black couple who had a restaurant that My father took me to once, maybe more than that. I don't know, but it was very inexpensive place, but they were trying to make a go of it. But there were very, very few Indians or blacks or Chinese in the Grand. It was almost all just plain old white people.
And you didn't, there weren't any or many kids of theirs that you had any contact with?
The only ones that I can remember was there was a black couple that had two children, as far as I knew, a girl and a boy. And the boy, Willie was his name, Torrance was their last name, and they were both athletic. Willie particularly was athletic. He was in everything, and he was, I don't know, 4 or 5 years older than I was, and I absolutely idolized him because of his athletic talent. He played football, and we would stand on the sidelines, and next thing, they didn't have a grandstand, so you'd lined up alongside the field. And every once in a while, Willie's helmet would become rolling over on the sideline because he didn't like to wear a helmet. And people would say naughty things about black kids and hard heads about why he didn't like to wear a helmet. But everybody would laugh and make fun of the fact that he didn't like his helmet. But he was a wonderful football player and everybody admired him. And he was a wonderful basketball player. And everybody enjoyed that too. Later on, I can remember one of my coaches who had coached Willie Torrance in high school saying how much they all liked Willie. And as he put it, you kind of cringe at hearing this today. But the coach was very proud of the fact that when they went on trips, they'd have to have two boys in one bed. Couldn't afford to have it. Single beds.